That is the sound of a bubbles making his late but still appreciated entrance.
Sorry, I was listening to Julie. How are you?
Yeah, were you listening to Julie? Uh-huh. Were you, huh? Yeah, I saw you. I saw you tweeting, yep. Standing, Miss Welker.
Right, man, she did awesome.
She did.
She yep. did great. Yeah, she really did. That was the best performance of. But what's so bizarre is that Trump had that interaction with Kristen Welker, who he was denigrating for a week, and he in the meantime he walked out of the Leslie Stahl interview, and then tonight he was
he knows he's losing.
Completely docile. Yeah, strange.
I think somebody may have gotten in his ear and told him it was going to come off real, real bad if he was standoffish with a smart woman of color like that.
Yeah, I think the threat of the mute button really got him.
It really worked, may I say, just for the... I know that the debate commission took a lot of heat, but that mute button worked.
It did.
That had exactly the desired effect.
Much more substantive debate, and Biden didn't seem so quick-tempered and didn't throw out insults and stuff like he did last time.
I think the members of the debate commission are going to get hammered beyond belief tonight.
Really?
Okay, so in that case, let's just quickly set it up since we're about to get into that. Everybody really knows what we're talking about, but just in case somebody listens to this after a historic election has taken place, this pod was recorded minutes after what was going to be the third, but was in fact the second debate between Joe Biden and President Donald Trump. They are hoping one or the other to become or remain president in 13 days from now. And this is our reaction to having just moments ago finished watching this debate. This is going to be our reaction. I think Kay said that she took copious notes. With me tonight, speaking of Kay, with me tonight, we have Kristen, Glenn, and Bubbles. They are all going to share their own Twitter handles with you, so I don't butcher them right now, because I didn't take notes before we started this. So they will start their Twitter handles. They will quickly tell you who they are, even though you should, in the cases of Kay and Bubbles, you should already be aware. Glenn is going to have another podcast where he's going to introduce himself to you. But just briefly, we'll start with Glenn. Glenn, tell us a little bit about yourself and what brought you here.
Hey, I'm Glenn. I am in Southeast Pennsylvania, outside of Philly. I'm a tech guy that stumbled upon the POTUS channel and the press pool a couple of years ago. And, you know, I just been loving the press pool ever since. And I don't know, I got looped in with you guys after I organized getting a cake for Julie's birthday last year. And, you know, it's been fun ever since.
That's our Glenn. He's also, he's a numbers guy and a stats guy, as you're about to find out. He's always got the arguments to back things up with numbers and stats and profound
and
knowledge,
thank God
which
for
is
that.
part of what he does for a living. And speaking of sharing their knowledge, hi, Kristen. Kristen, tell us a little bit about yourself for those of you who have not listened to past podcasts. And what brought you here?
Hi, Daniel. I'm Kristen at KChatwin22 on Twitter. I'm an administrative assistant for a maintenance department of a water and sewer board down in Alabama. I was a lifelong Republican and a speech and debate nerd in high school, so I really enjoy the POTUS channel for presenting both sides of everything, even though the other side lately makes me want to lose my mind.
I think losing your mind is also going to be a thread that is going to go through tonight's. Tonight was strange because it was an interesting and more substantive debate, but still, I think the tenor of what's actually happening in the country has more to do with losing one's mind. And speaking of losing one's mind, Bubbles, hi. Tell us a little bit about yourself and what brought you here.
All right. I am Bubbles the Vampire. I tweet at Bubbles Vampire. I'm a former university history professor, and now I manage insurance salespeople. While I really enjoy politics, and especially the POTUS press pool and Olivier Knox's show, my real passion is cheese. So you can shoot me a tweet anytime you like about cheese, and you will get a guaranteed animated discussion. So there you go.
Animated and very, very there detailed. You go.
Well, as detailed as you'd like. Very, I have to. I am a Leo, so I have to reel it in sometimes.
Yes, reeling it in is something that Bubbles is known for. Also, as all of us Leos indeed are, really. Yes, Glenn, I don't think you mentioned your Twitter handle, so this is something I want people to know.
All right, it's Glenn underscore McMillan, GLENN, MCMILLEN.
Yeah, so give Glenn a follow in case you don't follow them. Give all of them a follow. Also, Bubbles, thank you again for tonight. We again played Pool Against Bingo tonight, so a brief applause for Bubbles and his bingo cards, which were again a huge success.
Well, I you know, being the Leo that I am, would love to take all the success for this, but really we had so many suggestions, as we always do, and the Pooligans always provide the backbone of the card. Although it's curious, I have not seen anybody claim a bingo yet, and
Barty
okay
did.
Good deal. All right, excellent. Yeah, so we have one, so maybe there's some more out there. If you got bingo, let us know on Twitter.
Yeah, let us know on Twitter. Yeah, that's right. I saw that card. That card, yeah. So there may have been one bingo, but we had more last year.
It's 2020, man.
I just called it last
2020,
year.
2020, man.
Just feels like last year.
Because the first debate feels like it was roughly a year ago. So let's quickly get into this debate. So tonight's debate, hosted by Kristen Welker, who was, as we were mentioning, took some abuse, but I think by all accounts did a beautiful job, no?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
I thought she did great. Donald Trump was really starting to get on my nerves, wanting to respond to everything and holding up that one finger as if to shush her.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The tiny finger of doom.
She kept allowing extra 10-second rebuttals. I don't know the debate rules enough to know, you know, how many of those or what conditions allow you to keep giving those 10-second rebuttals on a given topic. But it was like, let's move on to another topic multiple times tonight.
Mm-hmm. So you were getting a little bit restless with how it was moving along, or not moving along, actually.
Not moving along, exactly.
Hearing Donald Trump say my name over and over again made my skin crawl. I think my name is forever ruined.
Several times, Kristen looked up, like, was like, what? Me? Oh.
Kristen, that's 1-800-THERAPY now.
Right. I get Talkspace for free as a benefit
think so
at work. I'll have
all
to look
Kristen
into it tomorrow.
Should get that. Yes, absolutely.
felt personally affronted several times. Called out by Donald Trump on the national television. Let's talk a little bit. So Bubble said that he listened to Julie just now. I caught the beginning of Julie's show with she had John Fieri on, and it sounded like the current consensus was that Biden maybe didn't do what he really needed to do and looked a little bit limp and pale, whereas Trump had a performance that was perhaps surprisingly, considering that he comes fresh off of giving himself COVID, and also a disastrous performance both with 60 Minutes and Leslie Stahl, and a disastrous performance at the first debate. This seemed much more under control, and he was perhaps also this time, despite the fact that he was spewing lie after lie, he was seemingly more in control, maybe off the room. How did you guys feel?
He was definitely more playing by the rules, probably because the mute button was there. But he was saying things in such matter of fact sense that, you know, even though they weren't factual most of the time, it was just so matter of fact of this is what it is. And he had not done that in previous debates. He hasn't done that in interviews. He got off on his normal tangent a little bit later in the evening, but you know, he was keeping a good solid line, and he made some actual decent jabs, I thought, in the North Korea discussion in the middle there. Whether they were true or not, his delivery was much better.
Mm-hmm. Kristen, how did you feel? I can hear you looking at your notes.
I was trying to be quiet with it. he kept himself under control a lot better than I expected him to. I half expected him to just start shouting from his podium when he was muted. He didn't do that, at least.
No, he kept that together. Bubbles, what was your sense?
Well, I did not actually watch the debate. I listened to the debate, and I was head down, you know, with the bingo caller card to make sure that I called, you know, tweeted out all the squares. Mm. So I didn't look up much. So I did not see the difference in the energy that Julie talked about. They both seem pretty measured to me without, you know, looking up at the screen. And I thought they both had their moments. I thought that... Trump was really effective at hitting Joe, not only on the fracking, but also on energy policy, specifically oil and gas. Joe seemed quite flustered and took a while to recover from that. And that's going to play well, as Glenn will probably tell you, it'll certainly play well in Western Pennsylvania and in Ohio, where I am, in Texas, where, you know, arguably the state is in play. So I thought he scored some good points there. But he was a disaster on immigration, and Biden really drove it home in that segment. So I thought they both had some moments. I think they also both missed some opportunities.
A lot of what Trump was saying about energy policy was patently false. I had my Canadian husband sitting beside me, and he showed me a statistic from the Energy Information Administration. This is, we buy over $80 billion worth of energy from Canada a year over the last 2 years, and purchasing is on the rise.
Mm-hmm. Right. No, it's, I think what Glenn said earlier was very true. The one of the keys to Trump, I think, getting away with what he has been getting away with, like collecting literally warehouses full of Pinocchios over the last 4 years, is that his delivery is such that he believes his own lies mm-hmm. so perfectly that he delivers those lies in a tone that makes you assume that if it's not factual, it's at least factual adjacent. even when it's completely erroneous and has no basis in fact whatsoever.
One of the things that Chris Cuomo always reminds everybody on his show on POTUS is that the con and con man comes from the word confidence.
Sure. Mm-hmm. I wonder, though, as measured as Trump's performance was, if it will help him with some of the voters he needs to reclaim most, like senior citizens mm-hmm. and folks in suburbia, and if he's going to make inroads with people of color. I didn't really see that any of his answers tonight would work to support or you know, grow his support in those demographics. In fact, in some of those cases, the immigration thing again was a train wreck.
If I may speak for suburban housewives here, one of which I am.
I did not use that word, but
we have our own suburban housewife.
Yes. He lost me a long time ago. I can't deal with the meanness and the hatred. And, you know, one thing that I think has been lost in this discussion that would have reached a lot of us is talking about our kids' safety going to school mm-hmm. and gun laws.
Hmm. So that's two. So let's. I have the topics here that Kristen Welker announced for the debate. So let's, if we can, if you're willing, let's quickly just go through these topics. There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 of them, I believe. Let's quickly go through these, and I would love to hear from you guys how you felt or what you remember of what was being said, and more importantly, maybe than what you remember, the impact that it had on you, and if there's anything that stood out to you in particular that you find memorable, starting with what everything started out with, which already seemed like a trap door for Trump. So I'm curious how you felt he did with it, fighting COVID-19. Bubbles, what do you remember about that part of the debate, and did anything stand out to you?
The normal tricks that he tried with deflection about MERS and I'm surprised Ebola didn't make a sighting. You know, it was all deflection and... he did say, "I take responsibility," and then in the same breath, blamed China. So I don't think, exactly. Yeah, I don't think he did himself any favors in that segment. I don't think that's going to have any sway with senior citizens. And, you know, his learn to deal with it, you know, that's kind of callous.
Yeah.
I thought Biden had a great line right there. We're not learning to live with it. We're learning to die with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Glenn, what did you think?
I think Trump was already in a hole in this subject. I don't think he dug himself any deeper, but I don't think he carried himself out at all.
Hmm. I really felt like he undermined himself there, because he had, when you have this much time and you actually were in a situation where you oversaw an event that turned into a super spreader situation, which curiously, Biden has never actually gone at him, which I'm completely stupefied by.
Well,
directly gone at him.
Tonight he gave an aside, an oblique. I think he did. He not mention super spreader in the White House thing.
Maybe, but do you know what I mean? When you are the root cause, right, who determined that there were no masks needed, to the point to where the leader of the Senate does not want to show up at your White House because he deems it too dangerous. That is something that in a setting like this, you need to mention and you need to drive home. If Mitch McConnell does not dare to go to the White House, then what is going on at that White House? And how, when you're trying to ram through a Supreme Court justice, do you determine that nobody there needs to wear a mask and then manage to infect a whole slew of people in your administration and then stand there and talk about how you've done everything and how you have overseen a response that has been in any way responsible.
Absolutely. Right. But I think Joe continues to miss an opportunity here, and that, you know, Trump is always, let's open the economy. We got to get the economy going. We got to be open. And that's sort of putting the cart before the horse. We can't get the economy back going until we get a handle of the COVID situation. And I wish Democratic leaders and proxies would just state that a lot more openly, that the economy is never going to recover if people don't feel confident to go into restaurants or movie theaters or supermarkets or anywhere. The economy's not going to recover. And if they don't handle the COVID situation, the economy won't recover. You can't recover the economy and then ignore COVID.
Right. Yeah.
I think Trump also fell into his big problem of not actually having a plan for his second term this close to the election. When they asked him what he would do to manage the next phase, he really didn't answer that. He threw out a bunch of statistics and deflections. And what really stood out to me was Joe Biden stressing supplying resources to school and businesses instead of, you know, trying to yank them away if you're not just going to throw open the doors.
Yeah, we're learning to live with it.
Miracle cure. And miracle cure. And when she asked, and I'm glad she asked the follow up, because he referred to Johnson & Johnson. Johnson & Johnson actually stopped the development of that drug. And the fact that Biden wasn't immediately able to come back with that is frustrating to me.
Yeah. Yeah. There was too much defense being played.
Mm-hmm. Well, and from a personal note, I was supposed to go visit my folks for Thanksgiving, and my parents are in their 80s, and both of them have compromised health systems, immune systems and whatnot. And this week they called and said, we don't want you and your kids to come because we just don't know what COVID's going to be like. So I haven't seen my parents. It'll be almost a year, and we're all suffering under this.
I feel that. I was supposed to host Thanksgiving for the first time this year because I have this nice new house with room for everybody to stay, and it looks like I'm not going to get to.
Yeah, my brother and sister-in-law aren't coming down.
Yeah, I just talked to my son, who told me that on Monday he's going back to school, and even though they're socially distanced over there and there's going to be mask wearing and temperature taking, and but it I had like a physical reaction to being told that piece of information. Like I started sweating.
My son went back in person this Monday too. It is really nerve-wracking.
Yeah, it's
especially really living in a state like Alabama, where people don't tend to take it seriously.
Yeah, that part astonishes me. Another thing, by the way, that I found really entertaining about tonight was how they were both, especially Biden, kept referring to the fact that he does not see red states and blue states, and there they stood with their red and their blue tie.
Yes. I noticed that right off because I was taking my Trump notes with a red pen and my Biden notes with a blue one.
Nice.
Wow.
you nicely organized and color-coded that.
I did. I am both a type A personality and a girl.
that covers that. Let's see what other topics we had. Second topic was American families. Does anybody remember what was said in American Families?
No.
I do. I did know that Biden reused a couple of his little one-liners from the first debate. It's not about your family or my family. It's about the American families. I thought maybe.
But he used that in context of other questions. I don't remember it from a moderator-provided prompt.
Yeah, he kind of slipped it in there. That actually seemed somewhat canned at this point because it. Mm-hmm, I agree. It was a reuse of something he already said in the first. It was effective in the first debate, less effective when it's put on repeat because you notice how practiced it is. Maybe is that fair?
I think so.
Mm-hmm.
That seemed like a little bit elongated COVID session to me. The American families thing.
It did kind of run together.
But I think where then the difference was stark, and I think where Trump maybe did not do himself any favors, and Biden, interestingly, also, I don't know, this was interesting. So race in America, to me, was by far the most interesting section of this debate. What do you guys remember about the topic race in America? I think it was interesting how do you remember what Kristen Welker asked them to do? And how do you feel that they responded to what Kristen Welker was looking for? Nobody remembers. Okay. Kristen Welker asked them to speak directly to families of brown and black kids who feel that they have to have, quote unquote, the talk with their kids.
Yeah.
She wanted them to directly address those parents. And Biden gave his answer. Then she reminded Trump of what she wanted. What do you remember about that section of the debate?
I remember Biden talking about his daughter as a social worker and, you know, how she doesn't have to be worried about, you know, a traffic stop or basically, you know, walking across the street or anything like that, while you know other people do have to worry about that. So you know it that part hit home to me.
I liked Biden's line that Trump had a dog whistle as big as a foghorn.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. I thought that was pretty accurate.
I thought Trump's attempt, because Trump made an attempt at some empathy there.
He did.
I missed that.
Okay. So understand, it was subtle, but Welker asked.
Whoa! Trump and subtle.
Welker asked him if he could understand
tonight.
You know, understand where these were parents were coming through, and Trump said, I can, and that it was.
But that was literally
that
the
was
extent
it
of his
absolutely,
answer,
and it was awkward. Even that was awkward.
But I don't think he actually can understand. Have you seen his children?
Yeah,
I know.
Well, I did think he did bring Barron up, which is the first time in 4 years I've heard him mention his son, especially in a political context. Now, in this case, it was that Barron was essentially a Superman who was 10 feet tall and bulletproof. But he did, you know, invoke the fact that he had a young son who, in the case of COVID, it could have been in a dangerous situation, which, I'm trying.
He also mentioned the money to HBCUs and the First Step Act. And to me, it just feels like those were just boxes he knew had to he had to tick off during his administration, that they weren't really that big of a deal to him. But, you know, he had to put them on his resume.
Well, criminal justice reform. I mean, he hit Biden with that over and over and over again.
Yep.
Well, he also said Biden called them super predators, which he indeed did not. That was one of Daniel Dale's fact checks. I was sitting here with my notepad and refreshing Daniel Dale's Twitter. And that was one of the things that he made a big deal about. And that was the Clintons. And you would never know it with all that stuff and the emails again. But I guess nobody let him know that Hillary is not running this time.
So that, which section was that in American Family? I'm trying to remember at which point it was, Biden decided that it was a great idea to preempt the entire email, the entire story about Hunter, by building it into his answer. Somehow, was it tied to Russia somehow? He gave Trump the opening to bring it up, which rhetorically seemed interesting to me from a debate perspective.
And it was early in the debate too. It wasn't like three quarters of the way through or anything like that, where you might have lost viewership at that time. It seemed awfully early to bring it up.
Yeah, that was strange. Anyway, but back to race in America again, real quickly. One thing that really stood out to me, and that was, you can always tell with Trump where he feels comfortable. And then when you let him continue talking, he will start veering off into territory that starts to be so strange that in this particular instance, Kristen actually interrupted him. Kristen Welker basically stopped him from continuing his train of thought, which was that only the very low IQ illegal immigrants come back for their court hearings, which not only is it not true that people don't come back for their court hearings, but to identify them as really low IQ individuals was really that throwback to rapists and rapists and murderers that he had
mentioned
sort of
that specifically as well.
He did.
That's true. He did that too. Yeah. So that this to me, the race in America segment to me was disastrous for Trump. I mean, just terrifying. And that the idea that should play well with suburban moms or with anybody really who is not interested in racism seems hallucinatory.
Well, his first description of when he said he first heard of BLM I was like that gif of Kermit the Frog, you know, clenching his mouth and shaking. I'm like, you know, I'm no fan of Trump, but it's like, dude, stop talking. Just stop talking.
But I understand, I guess, in that sense where Julie is coming from, because the responses that Biden had to those really insane things that Trump was saying seemed, I don't know, seemed very mellow and not up to the task of actually reminding somebody of what they had just heard the president say out loud to a national audience. I think there Biden really missed the mark in I don't know, I guess that's some sort of debate skill Kristen would be able to tell us, but I think in a debate, listening and adapting to what you just heard is a key component of really making an engaged impression. And I'm not sure that Biden did.
I'm wondering if he let a couple of things lie to not get it down further in conspiracy town theory land of bringing up, you know, bringing to the forefront QAnon or other types of conspiracies.
Yeah, that's, nobody actually went there, huh?
Exactly. And that may have been because Biden didn't continue the discussion down the crazy train, you know, that was going on.
So I thought one of Biden's brighter moments of the whole debate was clearly he came alive when he talked about separating kids from their parents at the border.
Yes.
You could see his passion. And I mean, he clearly came alive for that portion of it. And, what's the Trump administration going to do with that? I mean, there's no defense of that.
Yeah.
And
losing 545 kids and parents, you know, to not be reunited is just unconscionable. I mean, that's.
It's criminal. It gets my blood going. So, I mean, I can appreciate how it got the vice president's blood going as well.
Mm-hmm. So we think, I don't know, I guess I think Biden did a beautiful job talking about his opening statement that Kristen Welker asked for. I thought he did a great job. Later on, I wish there would have been more follow-up and just clarification of how vile what the president was saying on stage live to an audience really was. Because there should not, after what the president said out loud, there should not have been a discussion over whether or not what he may have said may or may not have been a dog whistle.
So I'm wondering if they let some of these things just be out there to put them in clips come tomorrow and just hammer them out of like, did you see what this guy just said kind of thing? Mm-hmm. As an attack later rather than allowing him to continue the conversation about those subjects.
Okay, so maybe, yeah, and that may be right. I guess I was expecting some dunking and the dunking did not happen, but maybe there was no dunking needed.
Maybe it's the dunk tomorrow when there's no chance of rebuttal.
Yeah, but then you have sort of, and again, I was not on the debate team. Debate is not something that is practiced in Switzerland in school on a university level. We just sort of do that naturally without being taught. So I can't speak from this.
But aren't you all neutral?
Yeah, right. Swiss debaters.
Yeah, Swiss debaters. Yeah. There is.
How can a society that is responsible for fondue be debaters anyway?
Have you seen the fucking Swiss Guards?
Okay, that's a different story. Those are mercenaries. So, and they're not debating. Yeah, and they are not debating. But
the outfits. Yeah. What I was meaning to say is, I guess for me, part of making the impression of being in a debate and possibly winning a debate is making going at somebody not going at them aggressively or with pre-canned remarks that you have practiced, but listening to what they're saying and then reacting to that and pointing out how terrible what they just said really is. And with the president frequently, that's really all you have to do because he does it to himself. And the president, contrary to Biden, has that talent. Because when Biden stepped on his own, you know what?
Yep.
Trump was very quick to point out that that is where Biden had just stepped. And I think that is maybe some of the reason why people found, or why Julie, for instance, would say that Trump did a better job at listening and reacting to what was coming in from Biden.
My only thought to my only rejoinder to that, Daniel, is so what's the end goal here? Is it to come up with a snarky, comeback, or is it to win the voters back that he would like, that he needs to win, Trump I'm speaking of here, to carry states like Pennsylvania and Michigan and Wisconsin and Florida and all the other states that are in play? And I'm not sure that his snarky retorts are going to be what wins the voters back in those states. Yeah, if you want to give him a point
you mean Trump's?
Yeah. If you want to give him a point for throwing out some good zingers, okay. But I'm not sure that helps him win those voters that he needs.
But did that make him look presidential, I guess is my question.
Oh, I think he's kind of beyond that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, but I think his demeanor tonight was probably the most presidential I've probably seen him in 2 years.
Right. There's going to be pivot articles tomorrow. Guaranteed. Yeah. Guaranteed.
Yeah, but a third of the electorate has already voted.
Right.
But are those the people that already had their minds made up and just ensuring that their vote counts? Or did people that were undecided, like, I have to get this over with because I don't trust the post office?
Well, and one of the things I was going to ask earlier when we were on this in the race segment was that at some point Joe was pointing out that the children and parents had been separated and they couldn't find that they couldn't reunite the families. And apparently at some point there, Trump said good, because my Twitter blew up with press people talking about that tomorrow the only conversation was going to be that Trump said good, that these families were separated and can't be joined back together again.
Yeah. I mean, I think it was a New York Times or a Washington Post piece that went into the how that discussion came about and how both Rod Rosenstein and Sessions and Miller were working on this idea that really they wanted this very particularly to happen.
Well, there you go. So I'll be interested to see tomorrow how this plays and. I was looking down at my bingo card at that moment, and then I looked up, realizing I must have missed something. So I'll be curious to see how it plays out tomorrow.
Yep. That's a good point. Now, climate change, I have to admit that during the climate change discussion, I went to walk Baloo. So I'm going to...
Oh, you missed one of the best parts, Daniel. You missed his whole thing on windmills.
Windmills. I mean, and tiny windows.
Oh my God, dude. That was so...
Yeah. If they'll let you have any windows. Yeah.
Well, Baloo was being a windmill, which is why I had to take him outside. But I knew it was time. But
it always goes back to bodily functions, doesn't it?
Yes, always, always. So you should wait until you hear yesterday's podcast with Joe and Denise.
Oh, I can only imagine.
Yeah. But what was gonna, so since Kristen took notes, Kristen, can you remind us a little bit what happened in the climate change debate? You mentioned the oil part, the oil and the energy part of that debate, but can you remind us a little bit what happened there?
There was a lot of, wanting to knock down the buildings and rebuild them with tiny windows, if you have any windows at all. And wasn't that the segment where he got into the AOC plus three stuff?
Yes.
Yeah, I thought, I don't know, it was laughable how he went after her knowledge on topics when, didn't she graduate from like Boston College with a degree in economics? I'm pretty sure she's a lot more studied than Trump on most of the issues.
Yeah.
You only have to watch her perform one time in a House hearing on anything to know that she probably is more informed on anything than Trump will ever be. That's the thing about her is, I think, that he vastly underestimates her. He likes her as a punching bag because the right hates her so much. But she's very effective, actually,
at what
she does. She can
hold her own, for sure.
Yeah. No, she's smart and she's good at what she does. Even video games, as we found out last night when she was playing on Twitch.
Yes, my 15-year-old son came down. Mom, AOC has a Twitch.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well... Elia Omar's game machine there. Jeez.
Yeah, that was on the other night.
Dude.
Yep.
Yeah.
Can we talk about that real quick?
Yeah.
So Glenn and I can talk about that. Bubbles and Kristen, we'll be right back. So that gaming PC, for somebody who knows gaming PCs, that was so, what Corsair sent her there is so absolutely incredibly serious. Mm-hmm. Of a gaming PC. I mean, it's way for overkill for what they're for Among Us, but
yeah, for that game, yeah.
Ridiculous. But that was a monster machine. And the fact that she posted the specs was just insane. Insane. Yeah, no, that was a good time there. Shout out to Ilhan Omar. That is a serious gaming PC, and I stan said gaming PC.
Yeah, awesome.
Aspirational gaming PC material.
Yes. Coming back to climate change and the debate.
Hi, sorry.
Speaking of really good.
Right, speaking of really good. Thank you, Kristen. This was one of the segments I thought where Joe Biden was a little bit more effective than in some of the others, because I think his preparation here clearly showed, and he couched his economic or his environmental policy in terms of economics. And instead of playing into Trump's trap about the Green New Deal that we must have heard 487 times out of Pence during the vice presidential debate, Biden had some sound policies or sound policy ideas that would both generate jobs and move the United States closer to, you know, the targets that he has in mind for reducing carbon emissions and coming to net.
And
go ahead, Glenn. I'm sorry.
And Trump's comebacks around natural gas being the answer is certainly a deviation from 4 years ago, where it was all about coal. So I don't know if that was just a tempered response because it was about climate change, and how, you know, to use more natural gas, which means drilling. So I don't know if that was on purpose to shift or just happenstance.
Well, I think it's...
It was a,
go ahead, Daniel.
No, no, go ahead.
I think in terms of... I mean, I think even Trump has acknowledged the reality that coal is dying. It's just... it, you know, especially compared to natural gas in terms of processing, it's just too expensive. It's not economically viable to process coal, especially in the seams in Pennsylvania and West Virginia and Eastern Kentucky. It those seams, the energy you get out of them aren't worth the cost it takes to process them into energy you can use in power plants and things like that. The coal in Wyoming is still reasonably good quality, but it's still it's very expensive, and it's more expensive than using fracking to get natural gas. Except when prices for natural gas are low, like they are right now. So the market sort of, and so the market sort of takes care of itself. Fracking is an expensive way to get natural gas out of shale. And so as long as the natural gas prices remain low, there's not going to be a huge market or demand for getting energy out of the ground through fracking. But it did lead Joe Biden into a horrible self-imposed calamitous response over both fracking and petroleum and its role and place in the United States. And Trump pounced on it. I mean, he landed on Biden like that, like a 600-pound sumo wrestler.
Do you think he scored points there?
I do. It depends on your demography. If you want a clean environment and you want a planet that's going to be safe for our children or our grandchildren, probably not. But if you're in Pennsylvania or Ohio or Texas or someplace like that, that probably had some resonance.
Mm. So that was the... I'm glad something is very cute. Whoever has something really cute, congratulations. Upstairs. Yes, that's good. That was very cute. I agree. National security. I think I was still walking Baloo at that point, I'm guessing. National security debate. I remember that there was some back and forth about Russia and about North Korea, which I think was mentioned earlier. So how do you think they did there?
Kristen, you want to lead us off? You got the papers.
I can. I thought Biden drew a really clear distinction about North Korea, where he and Obama refused to give legitimacy to Kim Jong-un and meet with him. Trump, you know, came running to him, and to what end? They're not really doing tests anymore, but we're living with a nuclear-armed North Korea. I thought Trump was going to fix that.
Mm-hmm.
This was
what do you guys remember? Go ahead.
Yeah, I think I flipped over to the Eagles game on that part.
So Glenn, you made a good choice, because I thought this was one of the more muddled parts of the evening. They didn't really answer Welker's questions, because frankly, I don't think either one of them has a satisfactory answer, because quite frankly, I'm not sure that there's a satisfactory answer for how to deal with North Korea. And that was one of her primary questions, was North Korea and Iran. And I'm surprised Trump didn't go into, you know, the money that Obama paid Iran, which of course we know isn't true, or he didn't take any of the Iran nibbles, which I thought was fascinating. But this wasn't a very satisfying foreign policy thing in general. I didn't learn much from it.
Which is surprising, because this debate was meant to be, had there been three debates, this would have been the foreign policy debate. And it is meant to be one of Biden's great areas of strength and expertise, and he's long, having been vice president and having traveled, having been part of national security decisions for 8 years. I'm surprised that he was not able to distinguish himself in that particular part of the discussion.
Yeah, and it's surprising because both of them have a really defined foreign policy sort of stance. You know, Trump is America first, and Biden is much more willing to work with our established and traditional allies. And he talked about that in terms of talking to North Korea. The only way he would do that is if it was in the context of involving other players, including China, to leverage North Korea a little bit. So there's a clear difference between the two, but we didn't really get to see too much of that tonight.
But again, I feel like there may have been a lack of original thinking on the part of Biden's debate prep team, because if I hear both America first and leg-humping dictators, then there is something dissonant about that particular dichotomy for me. Either it's America first and we go at dictators with some strength, or it's not America first, but dictator cuddle time. And if it's dictator cuddle time, then I don't see how that benefits America at all.
Well, I wish that Joe Biden would have said exactly what you said, because he had an opportunity, and then he called Kim Jong-un a thug. And he referenced Putin multiple times, and he did hammer Trump for having a bank account in China, but none of that landed as succinctly as what you just said.
That's depressing. See, that's why, that's maybe why I feel a little bit disappointed. Let's talk about it. Does anybody else have anything on national security? How was your football game, Glenn?
Well, the Eagles won.
Who'd they play?
Okay, barely. So that was a success.
The Giants, 22-21.
I'm probably the only one that listens to Smirconish on here, but we'll probably have to hear at least 10 minutes at the beginning of the show tomorrow about how he bet 50 large, by which he means $50 and not 50 grand on a football game.
I thought the Eagles covered the spread at all. So hold on, let me see.
Kristen, you suggesting that tomorrow Smirconish is going to talk about Smirconish?
Oh yeah, that's a pretty good bet any day.
I'm shocked. Shocked.
All right, so yeah, the Eagles had there was a 5-point spread that the Eagles did not have, and then the over under was 44.5, and it was under. So. Yeah.
So not a full success.
But a win is a win.
Yeah.
True.
Moving on.
So from national security, we went to the last section, leadership. Again, this should have been a slam dunk. I was editing yesterday's podcast during this section. How did it go on leadership? Tell me that Vice President Biden pointed out the complete lack of leadership by this president and made succinct points about how these failures led to our current calamity and therefore did a great job. That did not happen. Okay.
I was going to say I missed that part.
what happened during the... So that did not happen. That was wishful thinking on my part.
Okay, so, you know, I kept quiet because you said succinct. He flopped around. I'll tell you where he was more effective on this leadership portion, and he didn't mean to be, but
whoops.
Well, no, it was that Trump had said some stuff, and Welker gave Biden a chance to respond, and it was clear that Biden didn't particularly want to respond to that line of things. So what Biden did was to take that response time and to draw a specific comparison between his character and Trump's character, and his integrity and Trump's integrity, and the morals and values that he supports and what Trump does. So there was an attempt to talk about character in that context, and he did highlight the glaring differences in those two men that way.
Right. And I think that was very strategic of Biden, because what Trump needed to do in this debate was ensure that the evangelical vote was excited to go vote for Trump. And by highlighting it that way, he was able to you know, downplay the excitement of Trump and realize how against, you know, the values he really is, you know, acting. So I think it was
effective.
Effective, exactly. In the long game, while you might think he could have slam dunked him like crazy there, but I think it had a more overall desired effect.
And I also think, if I can continue the point and drive it just a little bit further to their last 2 minute statement, I thought it then dovetailed well to what he wanted to accomplish, Biden, in his last 2 minute statement, which was to talk about unity and his theme throughout the debate, that they're not red states and blue states, but this is the United States. So I thought that part where he drew on leadership and character dovetailed well into his closing 2 minute statement. So, Daniel, while he didn't do some of the things that you would have wanted him to do specifically, or well, he did some other things that, you know, were effective, I thought.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Do you feel that the end message, that final message of Biden maybe drawing a distinction of being for hope and optimism, science, for leading out of this, but with care and with caution, do you think that and Trump really basically kept making arguments about how about fear, really, about how the stock market is going to crash, everybody will own us,
American carnage, the American carnage retreat. Yep.
Do you think which one of those two apples do you think is more likely to be bitten by people who watch tonight, other than people who have already swallowed their apple whole and are no longer, in fact, looking for apple? Do you think that either one of those played better than the other with people who are undecided?
I think people are a lot smarter than Trump's argument generally panders to the, you know, he says, don't be afraid of COVID, but he tries to make you afraid of everything else to sell yourself on him. And I think people that are still honestly trying to decide, I think Biden's message would have appealed to them more.
Do you think that Trump's attack of this guy being a lifelong politician who could have done something about this by now, had he really tried, do you think that maybe stays in the ear of people who are undecided?
After seeing the past 4 years, I don't think that's much of a leg to stand on.
Yeah, Trump's because not the, an unknown the this time around.
The wanton destruction, and very surgical removal of and dismantling of whole swaths of areas of the government that have not had a good result, and just sowing chaos is not something that leads to people swaying to go your direction on a whim from a last 2 minutes of a final debate kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. But
at least from the delivery that was given there.
And on this one specific tiny little point, this is where some preparation on Trump's part would have paid off tenfold, because Biden sent back, you know, we didn't, when he kept asking, why didn't you do anything? Why didn't you do anything? Why didn't you do anything? And Biden finally said, hey, you know, we had a Republican Congress. They didn't. From 2008 to 2010, the Democrats had both houses and the presidency. And if Trump had countered with that, done any preparation and homework, he could have shut Joe down, but he didn't, because he doesn't do any preparation, and he doesn't know his history, and he doesn't care to know his history, and he blew.
But for those 2 years, weren't Biden and Obama bringing the U.S. out of the recession?
Well, and they were focused on Obamacare. Yeah. That was the real legislative push.
Right.
From a historical perspective, something that's being I'm seeing discussed right now on Twitter, and so I'm going to ask our historian. There was, which if we listen to the Post Press, we know to always avoid the Hitler.
Oh my gosh! I had kittens when that happened.
Nonetheless, that happened. So please tell us about your kittens tonight.
Well, it was. I think it was Trump who made some analogy to the United States having a great relationship with Hitler prior to the Second World War.
No, it was
Biden. Was it Biden that did that? Yeah.
Whew.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, first of all, the relationship was not that good. In fact, it was quite frosty. But above all, mm-hmm. you know, the United States was in the midst of the Depression. And frankly, what was going on in Germany was about 57th on the priority list. So we didn't have much of a relationship with Hitler at that time. But I remember tweeting out at that point, you know, basically a Hitler analogy and then that shocked emoji. Mm-hmm. Yeah, those don't ever go well. You know, it's canon in the Book of Julie, right? Thou shalt not ever compare anything to Hitler or the Nazis. It never goes well. And I'm mm-hmm. glad nobody. We just moved on from that in a hurry.
Glenn, do you need to take a moment?
He muted himself instantly. Poor guy. Oh, I love having kids.
Just when it was going to get entertaining.
I love having kids.
Yeah, me too. They're awesome.
Are awesome.
Speaking of kids, I have a nice quote from my 15-year-old son.
Bring it.
We were sitting here calling him President Accordion Hands because that is the only gesture he can make. And Ezra said, Donald Trump can only show three emotions and make one hand gesture.
That is very true.
I'm not going to argue.
Did you see that video of the accordion hands? By the way, that accordion video is one of my all-time favorites.
Yes.
I have not seen that.
I will post it just for fun in reference to this podcast that nobody has heard yet.
Yeah, I like that TikTok instructional dance video of how to dance like Trump the other day.
Oh, was that the woman in the Vermont sweatshirt?
No, there was a guy. There was a guy doing it, and then they had a side by side of him. Yeah, I guess it was probably popular.
He really antagonized TikTok big time. TikTok hates Trump, man. He antagonized those kids.
Yeah, well, that's why a million people were supposed to show up in Tulsa, right?
And then of a sudden, he starts going after TikTok hard.
Yep. And Parscale loses his job. Imagine. I think all of those are related, gang.
And then he lost his mind.
Yeah, and then he lost his mind. But not like on the windmills tonight. And he was...
Yeah.
What? Yeah.
And I don't think he knows what he lost when he fired Parscale reading that Miami Herald article today talking about the dissuading campaign that they did in parts of North Miami to get people to not want to go to the polls. It was a really good piece. If you guys want to go see that,
That sounds frightening. Wait, who did a dissuasion campaign? The Trump campaign.
The Trump campaign did in 2016, and it was, you know, a fair amount of disinformation or taking things out of context, but it was just on the line enough to make the disinformation work, you know, and you know, people were ripe for it more so before it was so present in the vocabulary of. Be on the lookout for disinformation all over the place. They said it had votes
effect.
Down like 4% or something like that, and that was the key to winning. You know, one of the keys to winning Florida was to get some people not to want to vote and other people's to get to vote.
So in that case, since that was a 4% depression, tonight was the last time really that they had a chance to present themselves to a national audience. There may be some more town halls or there may be some more events, but it will only be one, not the other. Definitely not both on stage together again. Are we 13 days out from election right now, I believe?
Mm-hmm.
12.
Right. It's getting close. How do
in
you...
In 11 minutes, it'll just be 11. Here on the East Coast, anyway.
Yeah, on the East Coast. Tell me a little bit real quick. We're going to do this at the end of this podcast. We're going to do a what the fuck meter at the end, which usually we do this in the beginning. We do it at the end. 12 days or almost 11 days before this election day that everybody has been looking forward to, I think, for 4 years, regardless of what your what your political orientation is. I think everybody has been looking forward to this day coming. Tell me what your what the fuck meter is at today.
Who wants to go first? How about Daniel, you go first since you always leave yourself last.
I did it yesterday, so I'm not gonna.
It could have changed. Hey, you know, we had a nice debate to get, you know, amplify.
That's true. If anything, so the What the Fuck meter, famously or not so famously, depending on how many podcasts of these you've listened to, goes from one comfortably reclined with a beverage in your hand and
cheese
enjoying the POTUS press pool on XM without any delay. Cheese and, in Bubbles' case, cheese, grapes, and some steamed vegetables.
Roasted, but okay.
They were steamed.
They were roasted. I roasted them, remember?
Then why? I don't remember. Otherwise, why would I be saying steamed?
No, I roasted them.
Anyway. We have this discussion every time. Okay, in my recollection, they're just funnier when they're steamed somehow.
Fine. All right, so for you, they're steamed, okay. My friend.
They're steamed. It just sounds... Yes, it sounds like something that would be more theatrical. Okay. When I imagine the shot of you sitting there with things, I like to imagine those vegetables being steamed. And then, so that would be the one end of the scale. The other end of the scale used to be dipped in honey and rolled in some fire ants. But as we said yesterday, that now sounds 2.5 years since we started doing this podcast. Dipped in honey and rolled in fire ants sounds like a spa treatment compared to what happened in those 2.5 years since. So I don't know where we're sending that 10 level at this point, but
yes,
I'm just curious.
I'd like the honey and fire ant treatment, please.
Exactly. Together, it sounds like just a mild step up from the hot rocks at this
point. Kristen, did they get hit with those bamboo sticks?
the rolled in honey and dipped in ants just reminds me of their edible facials.
Exactly. Kristen and I are big Frasier fans, so we will shoot back and forth texts 4, 5, 6 a night as we watch Frasier for the 100 millionth time.
And so, we usually always seem to be with just a few episodes of each other. Yep. One of us has always just recently watched it.
Yep. So we have our own internal language. So
internal Frasier
exactly.
Ritual.
So
nonetheless, I must submit you to this ritual. So What the Fuck meter, and Bubbles, since he has the most experience with this particular meter, is going to start.
Okay. So I don't even think, frankly, at this point, my meter works anymore. When they separated kids at the border, it kind of broke the what the fuck meter. And I'm just ready for this damn thing to be over, and I can't wait for November 3rd or 4th or 10th or whenever it is that we finally learn that the orange one will no longer be in the White House.
Mm-hmm. Glenn, what's your thought?
I've been hovering around an 8 these days. It's a little bit muted by the fact that these ploys are worn out and so obvious these days. And there's enough counterattacks, you know, like our good friend Borat, you know, stymieing Mr. Giuliani this week, you know, certainly helped with that. And then everybody just being all over everything, just fact checking and digging into everything. You know, it's like, yeah, this is nonsense. So
I don't remember if it was somebody on Julie's show today or something else I heard right about the same time. But the point was, if Borat could get this out of Giuliani, what must the Russian operatives be able to do?
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I retweeted that
without
one.
Without even trying.
Bush League, you know? Jesus.
Yeah. Terrifying. Kristen, what do you think with the what the fuck meter?
I think my what the fuck meter broke somewhere between that Secret Service ride with Trump around the hospital and the Gretchen Whitmer plot. It's just, it's beyond anything you ever thought you'd see. And it just keeps going. It's exhausting.
So just for reference, since we all know her, Denise said the exact same thing. So that's like 3 out of out of 5 what the fuck meters that we've done in 2 consecutive nights, 3 were broken.
Yeah. I'm not surprised.
Yep, and I wrote that down as my answer before Bubbles said anything.
So that was not a Fraser reference,
red
you guys.
Pen
are...
or your blue pen?
It's my purple pen that I was using to make my personal notes because it's my favorite color.
There you go.
There is no better note to end this on than a purple pen, since that seems to be where America is currently going, is purple.
Yes. Well, we were told back in the day when I used to instruct that purple and green were the appropriate colors to mark papers because they were not threatening colors. That a red pen was too scarring for the youngsters.
Mm. Now I know. Now I understand my life. I think in Switzerland they purposefully use red pens.
Well, if you get grease pencils, the letters are even bigger. Not that I would know anything about that. But.
Well, you know, now everything is online, and my students do it. My one child that is in school is doing virtual school at the school, and I do online college. So all of my grades come in like black Arial 10-point font, very neutral.
That is very new. That is calming. That is a nice serif font that nobody can be mad at. All right, ladies, gentlemen, I thank you all for your participation in tonight's event after this debate. We're really going to try to make a podcast every night until Election Day.
Okay.
So these are going to have minimal editing at best. As we mentioned at the top of the show, you need to follow Kristen, Glenn, and Bubbles on Twitter. Their Twitter handles will be in the description of this particular podcast, so make sure to follow them. The Pooligans Pod, as we're saying, is going to be back and is going to be here until the election at the very least. And then, depending on how the election goes, also very much after the election, because God knows what the fuck is going to happen if this man loses, and he has until January 16th to come up with some other shit that he can do.
Well, that civil service rule change was, I think, just the start today.
Civil service rule change? Did I miss that? What happened?
Yeah, the people that basically, the protections people have that make policy kind of got removed or something like that. So it makes it, you know, a bit more open to scrutiny of kind of the career government workers that are in the policy setting positions of those departments.
Yeah, surely nobody is in a mind of abusing that at all. So that is good. That now my what the fuck meter is again breaking anew. But I wish you happy Frasering. If it is already past midnight where you are, then it is possible that Borat 2 is now available for you on Amazon if you should desire to watch it, because it's coming out for me still tomorrow, for you today. Mm-hmm. So if you would like to see Mr. Giuliani interact with what he was told was a 15-year-old girl.
Yeah.
You can.
Bubbles, all I can say is, excuse me, I have to go poke out my mind's eye.
Yes, exactly. Daniel, thank...
No doubt a Frasier reference. It is.
Daniel, thanks for putting these together, and thanks for distributing the bingo cards. I appreciate that.
Yeah, this is fun.
Of course, that was super fun. I think everybody really enjoyed it. So. And we will reconvene. You will meet Glenn again in the not-too-distant future with another one of our new Pooligans. And you will learn more about him. And undoubtedly, you will hear from Bubbles and Kristen again. I thank you all, and we will talk again soon.
Okay, see
and
you later.
We will not. No.
Don't leave.
This is only the pretend end of the podcast.